Good morning, dear church family. I'm afraid it's my turn to be home with COVID and having to record my message for you this morning, but my heart is with you and I pray that God's word will be speaking to us this morning. I want to say a big thank you to Yolanda, my production crew. She is more experienced at this than I am and she's putting this together for me, so thanks Yolanda. I wonder if you've noticed a trend in our society in recent years, one that seems to be only on the rise. It's this: biblical words that we use to talk about our faith are emerging into our society's secular language. I'm talking about words like kind, believe, grateful, hope, peace. Whether it's movies or podcasts, social media, cards, posters, t-shirts, these words seem to be popping up everywhere. Let's just have a look at a few examples here. Just taking the word hope. This first one: do not lose hope. Please believe that there are 1,000 beautiful things waiting for you. Sunshine comes to all who feel rain. Or this one: where there is hope, there is faith. Where there is faith, miracles happen. Or this one by Superman Christopher Reeve: once you choose hope, anything is possible. Hope is being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness. That one from Desmond Tutu. And this one: always believe that something wonderful is about to happen. So some of these, I would say, are not true at all. We can never be sure that something wonderful is going to happen. Some of them are half true. Some of them are quoted from people who do know what they're talking about, but are given in isolation. But all of them are what I would like to call untethered. That is, there is no person or thing which undergirds these words to give them weight, to give them truth. You can't just believe. You need to believe in something or someone. Otherwise, it's just about the act of believing instead of the truth that we're believing in. You can't just be grateful in a general kind of way. Our gratefulness needs to be directed to someone or something. Otherwise, it's just thinking I'm lucky. And hope, well, hope without evidence or certainty, untethered hope, is simply wishful thinking. Now, I don't want you to think that I am mocking this kind of thought. On the contrary, I think it shows a yearning for real hope, real belief. It's like a broken signpost, remember, that we looked at last year. But without such a foundation, such yearnings are not enough. And this is what the writer to the Hebrews is trying to tell us this morning. So the writer's about to launch into an exploration of faith in what is probably the most famous passage of Hebrews of all. But he begins with a definition. And if you grew up in the church, you might have even memorized this definition in Sunday school. Maybe you can just reel it off. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. That's the NIV version, but there are others that give other shades of meaning. The International Children's Bible says, faith means being sure of the things we hope for. And faith means knowing something is real, even if we don't see it. N.T. Wright's Bible for Everyone says this: what is faith? It is what gives assurance to our hopes. It is what gives us conviction about things we cannot see. Faith in God is what undergirds our hope. It gives it firm foundations, like the underpinnings of a bridge. It must be faith in God, in the God who's been revealed in the Bible, not just a God of our own making. We do need to have faith in what we cannot see, or predict, or prove. But this kind of faith is not an unthinking or a blind faith. There's plenty of room for thinking, asking questions, looking for evidence. Now, we're not left with a dry definition. The next 38 verses begin to fill out what faith looks like by describing the many lives of faithful human people from the Old Testament. This is what the ancients were commended for.
By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made of what was visible.
By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith Abel still speaks, even though he is dead.
By faith Enoch was taken from this life, so that he did not experience death. He could not be found, because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him.
By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith.
By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs in the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with the foundations, whose architect and builder is God.
And by faith even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore.
All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them.
By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God would even raise the dead, and so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death.
By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future.
By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff.
By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones.
By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of the Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God, rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the application of blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel.
By faith the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned.
By faith the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days.
By faith the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient.
And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon,
Barak,
Samson,
Jephthah,
about David
and Samuel,
and the prophets,
who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies.
Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refused to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground.
There's so much to think about, to imagine, to chase up in this wonderful passage. But in fact, the writer's main point is very simple. Only one thing pleases God, and that is a life of faith. Stop and think about that. Not a life of obedience, not a life of perfection or trying to get things right, or not offending others, or being kind, or making as few mistakes as we can. It's not a life of success or significance or having an impact on others. It's simply a life of faith. A life of faith pleases God. And indications of this are scattered all through that passage. Think about Abel in verse 4. He's commended for his faith. His faith is said to have made him righteous. In verse 5, Enoch is described as one who pleases God for his faith. Verse 6 talks about without faith, it is impossible to please God. And particularly this verse 16, it says, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Because of his faithful people, God is not ashamed. Now, God never experiences shame on his own behalf, but it is possible for him to experience on behalf of his children. And here he's saying, I'm not ashamed of you. In fact, the opposite. I am proud of my faithful people. The list contains plenty of people who would not have pleased God on any other criteria. Think of David or Jacob, Rahab or Gideon, Samson, even Moses and Abraham had plenty in their lives that was not all that perfect. But they lived by faith, and that is what pleases God. And we can see too by looking from these examples what a life of faith that pleases God really looks like. We can see how faith involves confident action. It's not just about something that these people hold in their heads, it's something they act on, they rely on to make decisions. Faith is shown in response to God's promises, holding on to what God says is true and responding to that. You might have noticed that the faith results in different outcomes. Abel was still murdered by his brother. It doesn't necessarily mean that a life lived by faith is a protected or safe one. But too, faith is lived out by ordinary people. People who have faults, who sin, who are less than what they should be. And what's more, being faithful sometimes means not ever seeing what you hope for. Verse 39, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. Since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. God was pleased with all of them, and yet none of them received what had been promised. When God's plan is complete, they will together with us be made perfect. But they had faith when this was not clear. Now, in one crucial way, we are so much better off than all these people of faith. We know about who God is, what he has done. We know the plan and our part in it. Look at all the words in the verse that refer back to what Hebrews has been teaching us up to now. God has planned something better. We and they will be made perfect. And of course we know that even here and now we have access to Jesus through the Father and the presence of his Spirit living in us. But if these people of faith lived in the definitely not yet, we live in the now, not yet. There is still much that discourages us, including ourselves. But God calls us to have faith that the now and forevermore is coming and will be worth it all. And now we come to one of the most rich, deep, and encouraging passages in the Bible. I love this passage. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. This is where the writer has been heading all along. He paints this wonderful metaphor. The life of faith is like running a marathon. And it's though all those people of faith, those mentioned and millions more, are gathered in the stadium as we enter. They're no longer just examples or even spectators, but they are witnesses to the truth and to our life of faith in the truth, cheering us on. As we run, we can be hindered by all sorts of things, held back. Certainly sin will trip us up if we let it grow in our lives. But it doesn't even need to be sin. Fear can be a hindrance. Fear of changing or of vulnerability or of failure. Wrong preconceptions and ideas about the world can hinder us. Ideas about faith that are not right can hinder us. Hurts and broken relationships can certainly hold us back. Weariness and cynicism can also hinder. Are you being held back by anything like this? Now hear this. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. How? With our eyes fixed on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. Jesus is not just an example or a spectator or even a witness. He is God living a life of faith. He did it first. That's what pioneer means. And he did it perfectly. And here's how he did it. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus is our pattern for endurance, for perseverance. And until we willingly follow him in this journey, we cannot fully live the life of faith. I've always loved this passage, but it really came alive to me about 21 years ago. I was in the first months of pregnancy with my first child, now Tasman, 6'3" with a beard. It hadn't been pleasant so far, and the reality was beginning to sink in that there was actually no way out of this situation, only a way through. Mothers, you know what I mean. I'm not a physically strong person, nor do I cope well with sickness and pain. I had definitely read too many birth stories from those magazines that are supposed to be encouraging mothers-to-be. I was scared. I really wanted this baby, but the path looked painful, and I didn't know if I could walk it. And during that time, the Spirit drew my attention to this passage. Jesus, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And I felt the Spirit say to me, this is your opportunity to follow me on this path. Your chance to endure for the sake of joy. I was still scared, but I was also greatly comforted and strengthened. The pregnancy and the birth changed in my mind from something that was happening to me to something I was choosing to do, to walk in imitation of my Lord. And this verse has come to be my guide in all kinds of situations where endurance is necessary for the joy set before me. And here's the last verse. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. God knows the race is hard. He knows we will need encouragement. Jesus is our encouragement and our strength. A life of faith is worth it all. So persevere. There are many ways the Spirit could be calling you to respond today. You might be struggling with having the faith to undergird your hope. Be encouraged by the people of faith and try taking some action rather than worrying about whether you believe strongly enough. Take some action and see what happens. You may be feeling inadequate as a follower of Jesus. Take heart from these very ordinary, very less than perfect people who are held up as examples, and be encouraged to simply live a life of faith in Jesus. You may be aware of things in your life which are currently hindering your walk of faith. I encourage you to confess them to Jesus and ask him to help you throw them off and keep running. You may simply be weary of running the race. Fix your eyes on Jesus and he will strengthen and encourage you so that you will not lose heart. If the Spirit is speaking to you this morning, please make sure that you speak to someone else about it. Your husband or wife, your friend, your growth group, your youth leader or mentor. Or contact one of the pastors and come and have a chat. Jane has chosen the perfect song for us to respond to God this morning. The fifth verse of this song gives us words to bring to him. May I run the race before me, strong and brave to face the foe, looking only unto Jesus as I onward go. Can you hear the cheering?